Chapter 28. At the Foot of the Hill. Marvellous happy it was to be, alone and yet not solitary, or out of terror and dark to come, in sight of home. Walter de la Mare, the Pilgrim.
"You're not too tired to selfly, are you?" asked Dandelion. "And at the proper time of day for a change. It's a lovely evening, if my nose says right. We ought to try not to be more miserable than we can help, you know."
"Just before we shall fly," said Bigwig, "can I tell you, Holly, that I don't believe anyone else could have brought himself and three other rabbits safely back out of a place like that."
"Frith meant us to get back," replied Holly. "That's the real reason why we're here." As he turned to follow Speedwell up the run that led into the wood, he found Clover beside him.
"You and your friends must find it strange to go outside and eat grass," he said. "You'll get used to it, you know. And I can promise you that Hazel Ra was right when he told you it's a better life here than in a hutch. Come with me, and I'll show you a patch of nice, short tail grass, if Bigwig hasn't had it all while I've been away."
Holly had taken to Clover. She seemed more robust and less timid than Boxwood and Haystack, and was evidently doing her best to adapt herself to Warren life. What her stock might be, he could not tell, but she looked healthy.
"I like it underground all right,"
said Clover as they came up into the fresh air.
"The closed space is really very much like a hutch, except that it's darker. The difficult thing for us is going to be feeding in the open. We're not used to being free to go where we like, and we don't know what to do. You all act so quickly, and half the time I don't know why. I'd prefer not to feed very far from the hole, if you don't mind."
They moved slowly across the sunset grass, nibbling as they went. Clover was soon absorbed in feeding, but Holly stopped continually to sit up and sniff about him at the peaceful empty down. When he noticed Bigwig, a little way off, staring fixedly to the north, he at once followed his gaze.
"What is it?" he asked.
"It's blackberry," replied Bigwig.
He sounded relieved. Blackberry came hopping rather slowly down from the skyline. He looked tired out, but as soon as he saw the other rabbits, he came on faster and made his way to Bigwig.
"Where have you been?" asked Bigwig. "And where's Fiver? Wasn't he with you?"
"Fiver's with Hazel," said Blackberry. "Hazel's alive. He's been wounded. It's hard to tell how badly, but he won't die."
The other three rabbits looked at him speechlessly. Blackberry waited, enjoying the effect.
"Hazel's alive," said Bigwig. "Are you sure?"
"Quite sure," said Blackberry. "He's at the foot of the hill at this very moment, in that ditch where you were the night Holly and Bluebell arrived."
"I can hardly believe it," said Holly. "If it's true, it's the best news I've ever heard in my life. Blackberry, you really are sure? What happened? Tell us."
"Fiver found him," said Blackberry. "Fiver took me with him, nearly all the way back to the farm. Then he went along the ditch and found Hazel gone to ground up a land drain. He was very weak from loss of blood, and he couldn't get out of the drain by himself. We had to drag him by his good hind leg. He couldn't turn round, you see."
"But how on earth did Fiver know?"
"How does Fiver know what he knows? You'd better ask him. When we got Hazel into the ditch, Fiver looked to see how badly he was hurt. He's got a nasty wound in one hind leg, but the bone isn't broken, and he's torn all along one side. We cleaned up the places as well as we could, and then we started out to bring him back. It's taken us the whole evening. Can you imagine it? Daylight, dead silence, and a lame rabbit reeking of fresh blood. Luckily, it's been the hottest day we've had this summer, not a mouse stirring. Time and again, we had to take cover in the cow parsley and rest. I was all on the jump, but Fiver was like a butterfly on a stone. He sat in the grass and combed his ears. 'Don't get upset,' he kept saying. 'There's nothing to worry about. We can take our time.' After what I'd seen, I'd have believed him if he'd said we could hunt foxes. But when we got to the bottom of the hill, Hazel was completely finished and he couldn't go any further. He and Fiver have taken shelter in the overgrown ditch, and I came on to tell you, and here I am."
There was silence while Bigwig and Holly took in the news. At last, Bigwig said, "Will they stay there tonight?"
"I think so," replied Blackberry. "I'm sure Hazel won't be able to manage the hill until he's a good deal stronger."
"I'll go down there," said Bigwig. "I can help to make the ditch a bit more comfortable, and probably Fiver will be able to do with someone else to help to look after Hazel."
"I should hurry then if I were you," said Blackberry. "The sun will be down soon."
"Ha," said Bigwig. "If I meet a stoat, it had better look out, that's all. I'll bring you one back tomorrow, shall I?"
He raced off and disappeared over the edge.
"Let's go and get the others together," said Holly. "Come on, Blackberry. You'll have to tell the whole thing from the beginning."
The 3/4 of a mile in the blazing heat, from Nuthanger to the foot of the hill, had cost Hazel more pain and effort than anything in his life. If Fiver had not found him, he would have died in the drain. When Fiver's urging had penetrated his dark, ebbing stupor, he had at first actually tried not to respond. It was so much easier to remain where he was, on the far side of the suffering he had undergone. Later, when he found himself lying in the green gloom of the ditch, with Fiver searching his wounds and assuring him that he could stand and move, still he could not face the idea of setting out to return. His torn side throbbed, and the pain in his leg seemed to have affected his senses. He felt dizzy and could not hear or smell properly. At last, when he understood that Fiver and Blackberry had risked a second journey to the farm, in the broadest of daylight, solely to find him and save his life, he forced himself to his feet and began to stumble down the slope to the road. His sight was swimming, and he had to stop again and again. Without Fiver's encouragement, he would have lain down once more and given up. In the road, he could not climb the bank and had to limp along the verge until he could crawl under a gate. Much later, as they came under the pylon line, he remembered the overgrown ditch at the foot of the hill and set himself to reach it. Once there, he lay down and at once returned to the sleep of total exhaustion. When Bigwig arrived, just before dark, he found Fiver snatching a quick feed in the long grass. It was out of the question to disturb Hazel by digging, and they spent the night crouched beside him on the narrow floor. Coming out in the grey light before dawn, the first creature Bigwig saw was Kihar, foraging between the elders. He stamped to attract his attention, and Kihar sailed across to him with one beat of his wings and a long glide.
"Mr. Bigwig, you find Mr. Hazel?"
"Yes," said Bigwig. "He's in the ditch here."
"He not dead?"
"No, but he's wounded and very weak. The farm man shot him with a gun, you know."
"You get Blackstones out?"
"How do you mean?"
"Always with gun is coming little Blackstones. You never see."
"No, I don't know about guns."
"Take out Blackstones, he get better. He come now, yeah?"
"I'll see," said Bigwig.
He went down to Hazel and found him awake and talking to Fiver. When Bigwig told him that Kihar was outside, he dragged himself up the short run and into the grass.
"This damn gun," said Kihar. "He put little stones for hurt you. I look, yeah?"
"I suppose you'd better," said Hazel. "My leg's still very bad, I'm afraid."
He lay down, and Kihar's head flicked from side to side as though he were looking for snails in Hazel's brown fur. He peered closely up the length of the torn flank.
"He's not stones here," he said. "Go in, go out, no stop. Now I see your leg. Maybe hurt you not long."
2 shotgun pellets were buried in the muscle of the haunch. Kihar detected them by smell and removed them exactly as he might have picked spiders out of a crack. Hazel had barely time to flinch before Bigwig was sniffing at the pellets in the grass.
"Now he's more bleed," said Kihar. "You stay. Wait maybe 1-2 day, then good, like before. Those rabbits up there, all wait for Mr. Ezel. I tell them he come.
He flew off before they could reply. As things turned out, Hazel stayed 3 days at the foot of the hill. The hot weather continued, and for much of the time, he sat under the elder branches, dozing above ground, like some solitary chlessy, and feeling his strength returning. Fiver stayed with him, keeping the wounds clean and watching his recovery. Often they would say nothing for hours together, lying in the rough, warm grass while the shadows moved to evening, until at last the local blackbird cocked its tail and tuck-tucked away to roost. Neither spoke of Nuthanger Farm, but Hazel showed plainly enough that for the future Fiver, when he gave advice, would have no hard task to get him to accept it.
"Reru," said Hazel one evening, "what would we have done without you? We'd none of us be here, would we?"
"You're sure we are here, then?" asked Fiver.
"That's too mysterious for me," replied Hazel.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, there's another place. Another country, isn't there? We go there when we sleep, at other times too, and when we die. El Herrera comes and goes between the two as he wants, I suppose. But I could never quite make that out from the tales. Some rabbits will tell you it's all easy there, compared with the waking dangers that they understand. But I think that only shows they don't know much about it. It's a wild place, and very unsafe. And where are we really? There or here? Our bodies stay here. That's good enough for me. You'd better go and talk to that silverweed fellow. He might know more."
"Oh, you remember him? I felt that when we were listening to him, you know. He terrified me, and yet I knew that I understood him better than anyone else in that place. He knew where he belonged, and it wasn't here. Poor fellow. I'm sure he's dead. They got him, all right, the ones in that country. They don't give their secrets away for nothing, you know. But look, here come Holly and Blackberry. So we'd better feel sure we're here, just for the moment, anyway."
Holly had already come down the hill on the previous day to see Hazel and tell again the story of his escape from Ephrafa. When he had spoken of his deliverance by the great apparition in the night, Fiver had listened attentively and asked one question.
"Did it make a noise?"
Later, when Holly had gone back, he told Hazel that he felt sure there was some natural explanation, though he had no idea what it could be. Hazel, however, had not been greatly interested. For him, the important thing was their disappointment and the reason for it. Holly had achieved nothing, and this was entirely due to the unexpected unfriendliness of the Ephrafan rabbits. This evening, as soon as they had begun to feed, Hazel returned to the matter.
"Holly," he said, "we're hardly any nearer to solving our problem, are we? You've done wonders and got nothing to show for it, and the Nuthanger raid was only a silly lark, I'm afraid, and an expensive one for me at that. The real hole has still got to be dug."
"Well," said Holly, "you say it was only a lark, Hazel, but at least they gave us 2 does, and they're the only 2 we've got."
"Are they any good?"
The kind of ideas that have become natural to many male human beings in thinking of females, ideas of protection, fidelity, romantic love, and so on, are, of course, unknown to rabbits, although rabbits certainly do form exclusive attachments much more frequently than most people realize. However, they are not romantic, and it came naturally to Hazel and Holly to consider the 2 Nuthanger does simply as breeding stock for the warren. This was what they had risked their lives for.
"Well, it's hard to say yet," replied Holly. "They're doing their best to settle down with us, Clover particularly. She seems very sensible. but they're extraordinarily helpless, you know. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm afraid they may turn out to be delicate in bad weather. They might survive next winter, and then again they might not. But you weren't to know that when you got them out of the farm.
With a bit of luck, they might each have a litter before the winter, said Hazel. I know the breeding season's over, but everything's so topsy-turvy with us here that there's no saying.
Well, you asked me what I think, said Holly. I'll tell you. I think they're precious little to be the only thing between us and the end of everything we've managed to do so far. I think they may very well not have any kittens for some time, partly because this isn't the season, and partly because the life's so strange to them. And when they do, the kittens will very likely have a lot of this man-bred hutch stock in them. But what else is there to hope for? We must do the best we can with what we've got.
Has anyone mated with them yet? Asked Hazel.
No, neither of them has been ready so far. But I can see some fine old fights breaking out when they are.
That's another problem. We can't go on with nothing but these two does.
But what else can we do?
I know what we've got to do, said Hazel, but I still can't see how. We've got to go back and get some does out of Ephrafa.
You might as well say you were going to get them out of Inlay, Hazel Ra. I'm afraid I can't have given you a very clear description of Ephrafa.
Oh yes, you have. The whole idea scares me stiff. But we're going to do it.
It can't be done.
It can't be done by fighting or fair words, no. So it will have to be done by means of a trick.
There's no trick will get the better of that lot, believe me. There are far more of them than there are of us. They're very highly organized, and I'm only telling the truth when I say that they can fight, run, and follow a trail every bit as well as we can, and a lot of them much better.
The trick, said Hazel, turning to Blackberry, who all this time had been nibbling and listening in silence, the trick will have to do three things. First, it will have to get the does out of Ephrafa, and secondly, it will have to put paid to the pursuit. For a pursuit there's bound to be, and we can't expect another miracle. But that's not all. Once we're clear of the place, we've got to become impossible to find, beyond the reach of any wide patrol. Yes, said Blackberry doubtfully. Yes, I agree. To succeed, we should have to manage all those things. Yes, and this trick, Blackberry, is going to be devised by you.
The sweet carrion scent of dogwood filled the air. In the evening sunshine, the insects hummed around the dense white cymes hanging low above the grass. A pair of brown and orange beetles, disturbed by the feeding rabbits, took off from a grass stem and flew away, still coupled together.
They mate. We don't, said Hazel, watching them go. A trick, Blackberry. A trick to put us right once and for all.
I can see how to do the first thing, said Blackberry. At least I think I can. But it's dangerous. The other two I can't see at all yet, and I'd like to talk it over with Fiver.
The sooner Fiver and I get back to the Warren, the better, said Hazel. My leg's good enough now, but all the same, I think we'll leave it for tonight.
Good old Holly. Will you tell them that Fiver and I will come early tomorrow morning?
It worries me to think that Bigwig and Silver may start fighting about Clover at any moment.
Hazel, said Holly. Listen, I don't like this idea of yours at all. I've been in Ephrafa, and you haven't. You're making a bad mistake, and you might very well get us all killed.
It was Fiver who replied.
It ought to feel like that, I know, he said. But somehow it doesn't. Not to me. I believe we can do it. Anyway, I'm sure Hazel's right when he says it's the only chance we've got. Suppose we go on talking about it for a bit.
Not now, said Hazel.
Time for underground down here. Come on. but if you two race up the hill, you'll probably be in time for some more sunshine at the top. Good night.